This is Wisconsin Public Radio. It's time for Talk With and About the People Who Supply the Arts and Music of Western Wisconsin. It's time for Spectrum West. This week, it's the 8th annual tribute to The Last Waltz, the concert and documentary about the final appearance of The Band, a classic rock band of the late 60s and 70s. It's a recreation and a musical acknowledgement of an iconic event. We'll be talking with Billy Angel, who imagined it, then acted on the image, and Luke Fisher, who's been part of it for most of the 7 years it's been produced. The 19th Christmas Stroll in support of the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra is coming Saturday, November 18th. John Thorpe is back with a preview as only he can provide it. We also have a look at the first concerts of the new season from the wonderful Red Cedar Symphony Orchestra. Those concerts are Saturday in Chautauqua and Sunday in Rice Lake. Artistic director Kevin Peters is here. And here's our launch for this week. We live in a climate, political and otherwise, where we need to chuckle, laugh, snicker. The Bright Side is where you can go Saturday night. The Plus in Eau Claire hosts comedian Tim Harmston. And within two shows, Valley audiences will provide the background for what will become a new album, a new CD, a new recording of the wacky work Tim Harmston does. He and funny half Mary Mack were in New York City earlier this week, and we caught up with him by cell phone. Did you do the marathon?
No, I watched it. I didn't run. I got tired watching it.
I bet. Sweaty, too.
Yeah. No, we're just out here doing some shows.
Good deal. Well, I see you're recording a new comedy album on Saturday. Tell us about the timing of a new album. How is it determined that it's time to record? What's the science?
I think it's the right time when you have enough material that you want to immortalize, because that's what happens when you record. It goes out onto the internet and the iTunes and the Amazons, and it's out there forever.
Does that make the man immortal?
Well, it can also, depending on the reviews, you know, you're putting yourself out there, and that's what performing and art is all about, I guess. So yeah. You put yourself out there, and you see what comes back, and hopefully it's positive. I got great, you know, feedback from my first album, and it's been on iTunes for a while. So
sure.
The second one is going to be a lot different. It's going to be more, more personal and more introspective, maybe.
Okay, yeah.
So we'll see how it goes.
Is there a better time of year to record an album? Like, you need a full moon? Do you have to have are you just depending on a good audience?
Yeah, I chose Eau Claire because I love the audiences that come out to support comedy at the Plus. You know, the Plus has become sort of like a national stop for many touring comics and really good comics. And so it's an audience that appreciates good comedy, and I hope that's what it can bring Saturday. And it's a nice room. It's like acoustically it's nice and it's cozy. And and if it's cold and rainy, it'd be the perfect place for people to come in and congregate and hear my silly jokes.
I've always liked comedy albums that had, you know, some sound effect stuff, some ambiance going, like clinking glasses and stuff. Do you get that automatically? Or, I mean, be honest now. Do you add that in post-production?
Yeah, I always add that one where the server spills like 7 Budweisers.
Oh, sure.
And people are rushing to get a mop and a bucket. I usually add that one in.
Good.
After.
That could be a trademark.
Yeah, it starts the show and it ends the show.
I often, Tim, when I'm talking to songwriters, I ask about their process. I ask where do songs come to them, and do they really have to work at making songs happen, and whether or not they're spontaneous. How about writing comedy? How do you think that compares to writing a song?
You know, it's interesting. It's probably really similar process to songwriters. But I always find, like, it's better if I'm going to sit down and force it out of my brain and onto a page. It always helps to have a goal. Like, I'll pick a topic, and then I'll attack that topic. But sometimes it's the other way around, where something happens to you in your everyday life that's really funny, and then you write that down, you know, just a spontaneous moment. But typically when I sit down, let's say I want to write a political bit, I'll just sit down. down and give myself an hour to like squeeze my brain like a grapefruit and try to get something out of it. And sometimes it works. And then you go on stage and try it. And sometimes it's funny and sometimes it's not. And then if it is funny, you just keep going back and trying to make it funnier. And then when you have enough of those that are done, you put it on wax.
Yeah, there you go. Wax. There's that's dating yourself a little bit there. I mean, you brought up the word spontaneous a while ago, and I've seen you on stage holding a notebook, like an old spiral notebook, using material that's really still warm. I mean, the ink is still wet.
Yeah.
You do that often?
Yeah, I think you have to. I mean, it's, you know, when you return to venues, you know, year after year, you owe it to yourself and the audience to have a certain amount of fresh, hot material, fresh, hot jokes.
Sure,
and,
sure.
So I like to bring out the old ratty notebook and at least, you know, delve into some brand new stuff and see how that goes. And to be honest, that's when you've been doing it for a long time, that's the part of it that's the most exhilarating is to pull something out of your book that works. And that's when I get most excited.
That could be a good title for your new CD. It could be like... your stories are, they're like muffins. They're like dinner rolls. They're still warm.
You know? Yeah, yeah. And then you, sometimes you eat it on stage.
Mm-hmm. You don't want stale dinner rolls, do you? You want warm, where the butter melts.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I'm going to think of you from now on. I'm going to think of, yeah. I'm gonna think of buns whenever I think of you.
I might talk about that on Saturday.
On the phone with Tim Armston. He's at the Plus in downtown Eau Claire this Saturday, the 11th. Two shows, 7 and 9. They're going to have the recorder going. Here's a heavy question for you. What's the best part about being a comedian? What's your favorite part? I mean, you have to travel. You get to stand and watch and hear people laugh. When you're writing material, is there suddenly you go, oh, man, that's a good one. What's the best
part?
Yeah.
That's it. That's the part. That's the best part is when you go into a big slump writing and then you tell yourself, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write myself out of this slump. And then you stumble on, you know, your Hotel California or your number one hit. And then you bring it to stage and you know it works and you have confidence in a joke. And that's just like the best. I think that's the best part is you just see something that you believe in that you think is funny and then it works. And sometimes you don't even know why it works, but that to me is the real reward. And then the bonus on top of that is getting to meet people from all over the world, you know, all that has to offer.
Do comedians share material?
No. We do what's called you tag. If you go to a comedy show and you're with your friends, even if it's a comedian you don't know and you see him on stage and you see them do a joke and you think you have an idea for that joke that might make it better for them, if you know them well enough or you feel comfortable approaching them and you say, hey, I think I might have a tag for you. And then if they are willing, and most people are, even really famous, well-known famous comedians will be open to any tagline and you know, and then you give it to them. You give it to them like a gift. You know, I've had comedians that I write with say, you know, it would be funnier, Tim, is if you said this. And then I'll try it and it works. And then maybe sometime down the road, I'll see them do a joke and then I'll tag it for them. And, you know, so it's kind of a thing that a lot of people don't think about. But the comics are always watching other comics because you go to do open mic or showcases or whatever. So you expose yourself to so much comedy. It's only natural that you would see a line that might help another person be funnier.
It's got to take a lot of guts, though, to go up to somebody big and say, hey, you know, that thing was okay, but listen to this.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Yeah, I've done it, too.
Really?
I've gone up to pretty well-known comedians and said, you know, I thought, you know, and sometimes they're like, get out of here, punk, and sometimes they're like, oh, that's great, thank you, I'll try that.
Well, that's cool. You tend to think comedians would be very protective of their material. Do you ever...
Well, they certainly are.
Do you ever copyright your material? Is that a thing
no,
that you do? No, you don't.
No, unless you had some sort of tagline like get her done or, you know, one of those type of deals, or I don't get no respect. But I think that if a line is so famous and another comedian started doing it, there would be no need for a copyright.
So I was putting comedians in a nice light by saying they share material. We've also always heard that people steal material.
Yeah. I mean, the internet has made it very, very probable that if you do those long enough, somebody will steal your joke. You know, but there's also that thing where people have parallel thoughts and they write similar premises or similar punchlines. And then if that happens or you see it happen, you approach that comic and then you talk it out and say, well, you know, when did you write yours and how long have you been doing yours? Generally, most comics are cool if you stumble on the same premise or thought or whatever.
So you do that before the courtroom.
Yeah, before the courtroom and the internet battles.
Well, besides the warm buns and stuff, is there anything you can whet our appetites for Saturday night? Is there a topic, or are you just going to go nuts like you usually do?
Well, I'm going to let it all hang out. I was at the coffee shop earlier listening to some old jokes, just trying to mine stuff. I don't want to leave any stone unturned, because it's been almost 4.5 years since I came out with my last album, so I want to make sure that I have every single base covered, and I'm going to pull out some unfinished stuff or some old stuff that I don't do very often, and it could be a total disaster or it might be a success. So I'm just going to let it all hang out on Saturday, because it's about having fun, and I'm going to tell myself to have as much fun as possible.
You usually do what you're told.
Yeah. Thanks, Al.
You sounded like you were just being captured by aliens there for a minute.
That was the NYPD doing their thing.
Tim Harmston, always a pleasure. Looking forward to Saturday. Thanks.
Thanks, Al.
Tim Harmston recording a couple comedy shows at The Plus. That's in downtown Eau Claire. Saturday night, 2 shows, 7 and 9. The Last Waltz, session number 8. Just down the road, we have everything you need to know. News about this year's beautiful homes decorated for the holidays, opening their doors in support of the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra. And next, the Red Cedar Symphony opens another season on Spectrum West. Support for WPR comes from Luther College in Decorah, Iowa, where 2/3 of students study abroad before graduation, and offering up to 24 off-campus courses and programs in Italy, Malta, England, and more. Support also comes from Simply Done in Downsville, offering fair trade gifts and a space for meetings, retreats, or classes in their historic schoolhouse overlooking the Red Cedar Valley. Simply-dunn.com. We have symphonic news times 2 on this week's program. The Red Cedar Symphony Orchestra initiates its 2017-2018 season this weekend with concerts in Chautauqua and Rice Lake. We caught the orchestra's artistic director, Kevin Peters, on the road somewhere in Illinois. He pulled over, and we got the scoop. Here we are on the brink of another season. I feel like we're old pals. The website says, celebrating classical music in Northwest Wisconsin since 1983. After I saw that, I wondered if the Milwaukees and the Madisons would be surprised to know how alive and well classical music is in places they might identify as the boonies.
Yeah, it's true. I have no idea myself, the other community orchestras throughout the state, how long they've been running. I was 2 years old in 1983, by the way.
Oh, boy. Well, there you go. There's a neat perspective to have. Wow. Were you a musical kid?
I was. My mom graduated from St. Olaf and was a piano performance major. She was a general music teacher and church choir director and stuff like that. So I was involved in music from early on and also theater, too. Starting in fourth grade, I was in theatrical productions every year.
Yeah, you did start early.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Piano lessons from my mom as long as I could until it wasn't cool anymore to be taking lessons from your mom.
When was that? You were about, what, 24 then?
Yeah, no, not quite. I don't even remember when I stopped, but there was a point where it was very obvious it wasn't working anymore.
Okay. Well, now that we know how old you were in 1983, let's refresh people's memories and ask how long you've been holding the Red Cedar Symphony Orchestra baton.
I will be starting my, this is the start of my fourth season with the Red Cedar Symphony.
And you literally put on a lot of miles to do what you do, don't you?
I do. I travel a lot of different states, a lot of different venues, and I'm always bouncing around somewhere, but I make sure I'm home long enough to catch the Red Cedar rehearsals and concerts.
How do you think the Red Cedar Symphony has evolved under your leadership? I was curious to know whether or not you had any kind of a scheme when you took over. Did you have plans, or has this just all been pleasant surprise?
Once I got to know the orchestra, developed plans and a future vision for the orchestra. And, you know, it's not just my vision either. It eventually became also when we hired our new executive director, Alana, a couple of years ago. The organization has moved forward with tremendous success. Our audiences have been increasing in size. The orchestra has been increasing in size. There's more interest, more community support, more financial support. We've received grants from 3M up in Cumberland to help buy percussion equipment. The United Way gave us a grant to help purchase tickets for families in Cumberland with students so they can come to the concerts for free. So there's been a tremendous amount of growth in the organization and the strength of the organization over the past several years, which I'm most proud of. Artistically, though, it's definitely I want every concert to connect with the community. I want people to hear a song that they recognize or be able to relate to a piece of music, and also then give them something that might stretch their ears a little bit, where they can learn something from it as well. So it's been a fun several years watching this orchestra grow, watching the community grow, and we're now in these churches in Bethany and Rice Lake and Chautauqua and Cumberland Lutheran churches. So we're kind of developing a relationship with each community, which is great.
I made the note of the line, maintaining a great reputation sometimes is tougher than gaining one. You know, I think your symphony has a really fine reputation, as that statement hopefully proves. I mean, it isn't easy to maintain a good reputation or a great reputation.
No, I continue to push for high standards within the orchestra from a performance standpoint, but I also understand, there's limitations, of course, within that. But the orchestra members certainly work hard and practice hard, and I personally love seeing the summer concert every year when we're out in the park by the lake. And there's hundreds of people just packing that hillside for a concert with an orchestra out in the park. I just think that right there says a lot about the orchestra, that people want to come out and hear them. And, a lot of those people are potentially people that don't come to our normal concerts throughout the fall and the spring. Yeah, maintaining the reputation, maintaining the high standards, and making even more people aware that we exist. I think there's still people out there that we can reach and introduce them to the Red Cedar Symphony.
Oh, very definitely. And, you mentioning the concert in the park brings back the Milwaukees and the Madisons again. I wonder how many people down there who perceive themselves as somewhat metropolitan and having all of these things at their fingertips picture a symphony orchestra playing in a park in Rice Lake, Wisconsin. How many of them have even been to Rice Lake, Wisconsin? You know what I mean? So I like that.
Yeah.
I'm kind of proud of that. I'm proud to have all that stuff right in our backyard. I'm also glad you brought up Alana's name, because I was going to. And she's been a nice addition as the executive director. She, it appears, allows all the musicians to take center stage. If you go to the Red Cedar Symphony Orchestra website, there's no Alana Loftman pictures or anything or listing her as executive director. There is the headline, and there is Kevin Peters, artistic director, underneath it, and you celebrate the music. She allows everybody else to take the spotlight, it appears.
Yeah, absolutely. She does amazing work behind the scenes. If you look at our donor list from a few years ago to where we are today, that's a direct result of her work of reaching out, letting these people know that we're there and that we need the financial support to continue as public support, and the grant funding is starting to become more and more challenging to receive. Things are running so much smoother now, and it takes a lot of pressure off of a few board members. It's a well-oiled machine now. I'm very, very proud to be a part of it.
And you're applying some of your own oil, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Kevin Peters, sitting in the wayside in Illinois talking to us about the Red Cedar Symphony Orchestra. He is, by the way, artistic director of the Red Cedar. Their first concerts of the season are Saturday, November 11th in Shatek, that's in the evening, and Sunday, November 12th, that's in Rice Lake, in the late afternoon. The season, we can talk about the season because it's just beginning, includes the fall concert, your annual concerto competition. The deadline for that is rapidly approaching. We should make note of that, and we'll talk about it in weeks to come. A new chamber recital coming in February and the spring concerts, which feature the concerto winner. Now, the fall concerts, Saturday and Sunday, they feature a Mendelssohn symphony, some Bach chorales, and a big marimba number. Give us more details.
Most people are probably aware, whether they're Lutheran or just generally aware in history, we're commemorating the 500th anniversary of Martin Luther's Reformation. Since we do perform in Lutheran churches, we felt it would be appropriate to perform a piece that is often associated with that, and that is Mendelssohn's Symphony No. 5, which he is subtitled the Reformation Symphony. Interestingly enough, the symphony was written for the Augsburg Confession, the 300th anniversary of that, which is different than the Reformation, but it's all related. And the main thing that ties us into the Reformation is Martin Luther wrote the hymn, A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. And Mendelssohn uses the theme of that in the fourth movement of this symphony. So it's a fantastic piece of music that isn't performed all that often. Some people feel Mendelssohn has much better works out there, especially in the symphonies. But this is a fantastic opportunity to, again, hear an entire symphony performed. Definitely melodies that people will leave singing in their head.
Ah. So now move on to that marimba piece. It's a concerto number one. I need to know more about that.
Well, this is a piece written by Ney Rosaro, and this is one of the few opportunities, I think, that we've had to perform a piece by a living composer. So Rosaro wrote this marimba concerto and performed it himself. He is a marimba player himself, but we are going to have Rice Lake's own Jim Hurst performing on marimba, and this is incredible. It is such a fun piece to listen to watch Jim and the artistry on the marimba. I mean, it's a strings-only piece. It's challenged the orchestra because it's not all the same time signature. It jumps around, and it feels different. You know, I like to dance to it to get to know the feel of the piece. But Jim is fantastic on the marimba, and I encourage any percussionist out there to come to this concert just to see that, because you'll be blown away.
I read at the bottom of one of your releases about you getting a donation for a xylophone from 3M, the people that you mentioned up in Cumberland. Tell our audience the difference between a concert xylophone and marimbas.
Well, marimbas will have a wider key to them. They're typically a larger range as well. The xylophone, most listeners will hear it as a kind of much a higher pitched sound, but they're both keyboard instruments, so they're both similar to a piano in setup of the keys and things like that, and are also mallet instruments.
Xylophones also sound more metallic, don't they? Marimbas are kind of a softer.
Yeah, that's a good way of describing it as well. Marimbas are much more of a mellow sound.
Yeah. My mother had a marimba album when I was a kid, and she'd kind of meringue around the house with the with the vacuum cleaner, and it was... I had a strange upbringing, but it sure was a lot of fun.
Well, good.
Good luck in your first concerts of the season, and we look forward to talking to you more about the Red Cedar Symphony Orchestra as the season unfolds, especially that new recital coming up in February. Can't wait to hear about that. The website is redcedarsymphony.org. You can leave the rest area now. Kevin Peters, thanks so much for joining us on Spectrum West and Wisconsin Public Radio. As always, a pleasure.
Thanks, Al. Appreciate it.
Concerts again are Saturday, 7 p.m., Shatek Lutheran Church. Sunday afternoon at 4, Bethany Lutheran Church, Rice Lake. RedCedarSymphony.org is the website there. You're listening to Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. The Communiversity Symphonic Band's first concert of the season is next Tuesday evening at 7 o'clock in the UW-Barron County Fine Arts Theater. A little Spectrum memo for you. Well, even if it's not yet beginning to look a lot like Christmas, as the song says, here's one way it's definitely beginning to feel like Christmas. The 19th annual Friends of the Symphony Christmas Stroll, visiting impeccably decorated homes and all businesses, all in support of the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra. The guy whose visit is as annual as the affair is John Thorpe. You're always a great guest to have for this particular event.
Well, I'm kind of like Mr. Christmas for you because we do have this little tradition when I come in. We start to kick the season off. I have a pair of Christmas socks that I give you every year to start kicking you off into the Christmas season.
Thank you.
Yes.
And let me describe them briefly. They have a pickup truck with a Christmas tree and candy canes in the back. You know, I don't mind having to rely on you to give us an idea of what it is we're going to see. You're good at that. I mean, you're a decorator. You know exactly what's going on. So how many, where are they, and what's special this year?
Well, I'm pretty excited about this year's stroll. I'm excited about every year's stroll. But this one, I'm going to do this a little out of order. But I have some friends who have this amazing home. I've been working on them for about 20 years to put their house on the stroll. And this year, they finally relented. This is what I consider to be the crown jewel of Eau Claire real estate. I can't think of a finer home on a finer piece of property. It's the historic Roy Wilcox home. It has not been open to the public since they restored it about 20 years ago, and it is flawlessly restored. If you want to see what a properly done restoration of an historical home looks like, this is the home to check out. There's nothing else like it.
Forgive me for not knowing where it is.
This is on Wilcox, the only house with a Wilcox address. Its backyard is on the Chippewa River. It is across from Owen Park. It's one of only five homes in downtown Eau Claire whose backyards are directly on the river.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah.
So it is considered a Prairie Georgian, which is an unusual combination. It was built in 1912. So if you think in terms of the Titanic having sunk in 1912, this house was being built and designed at the very same time the Titanic was being built and designed. So you have to think that era. But about 20 years ago, they brought this home into the 21st century. So it has a up-to-date kitchen that is visually appropriate to the home. Hmm. It has central air conditioning. It has central stereo, things that never were around in 1912. The walls are flawless. The decorating is incredible. And their personal traditions are Ukrainian and rather kind of lavish dinner plans will be kind of highlighted.
What is the Wilcox legacy? Do you know?
This gets a little cloudy. There is more than one kind of Wilcox house in town because the house across the street, what's known as the historic Barber House, Francis Wilcox, who grew up in the Roy Wilcox house, which will be open this year, married into the Barber family. And so Francis Wilcox was living in the Barber house. So like all these were all like Wilcox houses. So it gets a little confusing as to who was where and when. We have had the historic Barber house on the stroll twice, but this is really a first for the historic Roy Wilcox house. So it's an amazing house. I'm really excited about that one. But I'm excited about all our houses. We always encourage people to get their tickets in advance. And they are available at Avalon Floral, Brent Douglas Flowers, Festival Foods, and Willow and Water, and then actually at Grace Lutheran during office hours. Grace Lutheran Church is going to serve as our host venue, so you either can start there and buy your tickets, or in the middle of the day take a cookies and coffee break and restroom break. So really get your tickets in advance if you can. An interesting thing this year is historically, in the first years of the stroll, we were able to get houses clustered together so you could literally stroll or walk from house to house. With Grace Lutheran as our host site, we have three homes within two blocks. So you really could, for the first time in many years, stroll from home to home to home.
Yeah.
And they are three historical homes. What's interesting, one of the homes has a surprisingly crisply modern interior that you would absolutely not expect. I think you'd find those three homes interesting. And the fact you could stroll if it's a beautiful day, and invite people to do that. We do have one business on the stroll, and that is going to be Bijou Bistro, which is located at the intersection of East Claremont Avenue and London Road. Yeah. And Tony is going to highlight table settings. A lot of us need inspiration for how to set a holiday table. He's going to do five holiday tables set for the holidays to hopefully inspire you if you are going to set your own holiday table. You might be able to get some ideas there. And we're working with one of his wine vendors to see if we can get a little wine tasting too. Oh.
So you talked about advance tickets, and I just want to let people know, advance is a concept that is still fresh because this doesn't happen until Saturday the 18th. So you do have time to get those.
We do have time to get those.
Advanced tickets. John Thorpe in the studio with us. We are talking about the Friends of the Symphony's 19th annual Christmas stroll. Good for you.
We have another completely charming house in the Third Ward. It's a little Dutch colonial. The owner's mother had been in the antiques business, and when she went out of that business, the owner had gone in and selected her favorite antiques and assembled them into her personal home. Mm-hmm. So this home has just a beautiful collection of exquisite antiques, the best of the best from her mother's business. And finally, just south of town, about 15 minutes south of Claremont Avenue, we have an equestrian estate. It's a prairie-style home designed by architect Mark Caldwell out of the Twin Cities at the time. It includes at least 24 custom stained glass windows designed by our late, great artist Laurie Beasy and installed in there, very much as Frank Lloyd Wright often bathed his homes in stained glass windows. This is kind of done the same way. So it is a beautiful estate on lovely grounds, south of town, about 15 minutes, very well worth a stop. And if you enjoy arts and crafts, this house was designed to house a collection of arts and crafts. It has genuine rookwood tiles around the fireplace, if you know what those are. It has some antique arts and crafts stained glass, in addition to the contemporary stained glass that was newly installed when the house was built.
I don't know what those tiles are.
Rookwood tiles. I wish I could tell you more. They are ceramic tile. They're of the arts and crafts period. I have kind of a cousin who also has a house of about that 1920 vintage, and she has rookwood tiles. And I knew the restoration of them was a real big deal for her to restore those tiles. So I know it's kind of a big deal. So
the mechanics of the stroll are that you can, anytime between noon and 5 p.m., do it any way you want.
Right. Any order you'd like. Mix it up. If you want to start in the country and work your way in, if you want to start in town, if you want to start historical and work toward contemporary, it's really tour in any order you wish. It's all during daylight hours, so it's easy to get around. It's a lot of fun, and the tickets are only $20. I really wanted the group to increase the ticket price this year because I thought our offerings were so insanely amazing. Mm-hmm. But we've stuck to the $20 ticket price. You can do an additional donation. This is the Friends of the Symphony fundraiser. If you can afford a little bit more, we appreciate the donation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about keeping the symphony alive. Oh, and by the way, we do, of course, have live music at each venue as available. Yes.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah,
depending on space considerations, we have a string quartet in one of the houses down to a pianist at another house. So kind of everything in between.
And so the gist of it is not just to see these iconic homes, but it's also to see how they're decorated.
Really, it's a great way to kick off Christmas. It is Saturday the 18th is Deer Hunter Widow Weekend. So if you're not out shooting Bambi and Thumper, you may be in town, you know, looking at houses or something like that. And so that's historic. We always do it the Saturday before Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of great to really get in the mood for the season by visiting these homes. It's a great annual tradition for many people. We have a lot of devoted followers who look forward to this every year.
I bet you they smell good, too.
Yes.
Candles and my olfactory nerves are the things that tell me that the holidays are here.
Well, trust me, if they have a fresh Christmas tree, it's really fresh because this is the Saturday before Thanksgiving, and some of these people have a fresh Christmas tree up and decorated along with fresh greens. Yeah. So, yes, there are pleasant aromas, to be sure.
And by the way, not all men go deer hunting.
No, that's a fact. We have plenty of men to go to this, too.
Not me.
So
actually, in this day and age, there are deer hunting widowers.
That's a fact.
There's a lot of women that deer hunt nowadays.
We should probably cut that whole part out of this segment then.
No, I like it. I like it. We're keeping it.
Okay.
Because that's the fun of having John Thorpe in the studio.
Well, obviously, I'm here to promote this, and I'm never out killing deer because I'm so busy running the Christmas stroll as I have been for many years.
I'm not sure you'd look good in blaze orange anyway.
Orange is the New Beige.
Oh, is it? There's a TV show like that, isn't it?
That's a different TV show, different color.
Yeah, I see. Okay. So Friends of the Symphony, do they hold any other events during the year, or is this the biggie?
This is the biggie. We used to have a garden stroll, and we still kind of have that franchise, but we've found that doing the garden stroll is an equal amount of work, mm-hmm. but if it's a rainy day, we don't get quite the number of turnout that we get as we do for the Christmas stroll. This is our most consistent product. We have had a fine art sale, which would kind of still be ongoing. We have tried other events. We've tried moving a special event to Menominee, for instance. So we're experimenting with a second event in addition to this one, but this is our biggie that we really rely on.
Saturday, November 18th, noon to 5 p.m. The center of it all is Grace Lutheran.
Grace Lutheran Church. If you use the Oxford Avenue entrance, there's a parking lot right there, and there's no steps to get in or out, and there'll be coffee and cookies and restrooms and live music there also. And from that location, if you're up to it, you can walk to three of the homes.
And between now and the 18th, good idea to buy tickets. Also, where can they get information? Can they go online? Is there...
Yes, at the Symphony website. Okay. There will be a segment you might have to look for a little bit, but there's there's a stroll segment on the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra website for the Friends of the Symphony and the Christmas Stroll. And then there will also be a Facebook event. So look for it on Facebook.
Thank you, John Thorpe, as always. Good to have you with us, and have fun on the 18th.
Thank you.
The website is cvsymphony.org. It's a rock and roll moment in history that's recreated each year in Eau Claire, and we'll talk with a couple guys who make that happen next on Spectrum West. Support for WPR comes from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona, presenting multiple exhibitions annually, while home to art inspired by water, including Washington Crossing the Delaware by artist Emmanuel Leutze, mmam.org. Support also comes from the National Eagle Center in Wabasha, Minnesota, offering wild bald eagle viewing and interactive eagle experiences to visitors of all ages every day. Details at nationaleaglecenter.org/calendar. Now, Jim Oliver has the week off as far as sharing a conversation, but we couldn't let him miss the program entirely, so here he is with What's on Stage in Western Wisconsin.
Thanks, Al. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will present Annie November 16th to the 19th at the State Theater in Eau Claire. The University of Wisconsin Stout Theater will present The Normal Heart Friday evening and Saturday afternoon and evening in the Harvey Hall Theater at the University in Menominee. Madagascar, a Musical Adventure Junior, will be performed by the Phipps Children's Theater Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays through November 19th at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. Chippewa Valley Theater Guild will present Wait Until Dark through Sunday at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. The Northern Star Theater of Rice Lake will stage Escanaba in the Moonlight through Saturday. Last Lists of My Mad Mother will be staged November 16th through the 18th at the Heidi Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. Chippewa Valley Theater Guild will hold auditions for The Odd Couple, the female version, 7 p.m. Monday and Tuesday at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. And the Eau Claire Children's Theater has scheduled auditions for And Then They Came for Me, Remembering the World of Anne Frank, at 5:30 p.m. November 19th and the 20th at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Back in 1976, the rock group known as The Band decided they'd had enough. They were pulling the plug, but not before they did one final concert.
I pulled into Nazareth, was feeling about half past dead. I just need some place where I can lay my head. Hey, mister, can you tell me where a man might find a bed?
Thanksgiving Day, November 26th, at the Winterland Ballroom in San Francisco. They were joined by more than a dozen guests, folks like Eric Clapton, Ringo, Bob Dylan, Paul Butterfield, Van Morrison, Neil Diamond, Stephen Stills, and more. Well, for the last 7 years, musicians from around here and beyond have commemorated that iconic concert and the documentary that was made about it. And on November 22nd, the day before Thanksgiving, they'll do it again. It's at the Metro in downtown Eau Claire, formerly the Mandarin Club, most recently the Boys and Girls Club. We invited originator of the concept and a company known as Stage Fright, Billy Angel, and organizer Luke Fisher to stop by to fill us with details. Luke was on time, Billy got delayed, but we began. Since you're here solo for now, and I should let people know that Billy Angel, our second guest, is going to come barging through the door eventually. And that's okay. You're quite a prolific songwriter. You're in a bunch of groups.
Yes.
Do you write all different kinds of music genres, or do you like to stick to a certain kind of music that's original for you?
I try to make every band that I'm in have their own personality. I'll write whatever's on my mind. And that might be a folk tune, it might be a country tune, it might be a heavy metal tune.
Oh, yeah.
And after I get all of those things kind of banked up, I sort of go through and figure out what would work best for each different group. Certain things I'll write, I'll go, that's an Acoustic Who tune.
Sure.
Other things I write, this would be great with four or five harmonies stacked on top. This would be great for the Eggplant Heroes. Other stuff is better for, like, my group, Poor Man's Ridge.
So you arrange all the stuff, too? In other words, you put all the parts together, or do you just say, here's a song I wrote, let's work it out, let's work on the harmonies, let's work on the leads?
That's usually how it works out. Sometimes I have a more strict idea in my mind of what I want to do. You know, the drums have to be this way, you should put a harmony on top of me here, the bass needs to come in over this way. Other times it's like, yeah, here's my idea, guys, let's get a drum beat behind this and see where we can go, what we can do with it.
I guess it's a testament to the power of this rockumentary, that's not a word that I made up, obviously, that young guys like you are engaged, now we're talking about The Last Waltz, we just segued, folks. Young guys like you are engaged in singing the praises of this thing, because unlike me, you weren't around for the band.
Correct.
Or the Swan Song concert. Do you remember the first time you heard it? How were you exposed to The Last Waltz, or the band in general?
Well, my first exposure to the band was probably when I was two or three.
Really?
My dad would play The Wait for me before I'd go to bed.
Get out of town.
Well, my name's in the song.
Well, there you go.
So okay. I always thought the song was about me.
Go down, Miss Moses. There's nothing you can say. It's just old Luke, and Luke's waiting on a judgment day. Well, Luke, my friend, what about young Annalee? He said, do me a favor, son, won't you stay and keep Annalee company? Take a load off Fanny. Take a load.
And there was a girl who lived across the street named Annie, and I didn't realize till later it was actually Fanny in the song.
So instead of having bedtime stories read to you, you had music.
Yeah, yeah. The Wait was one, and Big Bad John was another favorite of mine. But segueing back to the concert, I found out about it in college. There was a group of musicians I was hanging out with when I was going to school in Duluth. Everybody was really into The Last Waltz and the band and all the acts associated with it. So it was one of those things where almost to be cool, you had to be familiar with that documentary.
See, and that just goes to show you that I am just not cool. Because honestly, folks, I don't mind admitting this, Luke had to give me a primer on what it was via email before we even lined up this conversation. And I feel somewhat embarrassed because I brought it up to a few of my contemporaries and they said, You don't know what The Last Waltz is, Al? I mean, I knew the band.
Sure,
obviously,
sure.
But The Last Waltz, no. But then again, for various reasons, I have to admit that I don't remember much about the 70s.
Well, and there was a lot going on, too.
There was a lot going on, and I had a lot going on. So now the band is listed as a Canadian-American band. They were based in Toronto.
Yep. Well, they did start out with a guy named Ronnie Hawkins.
Okay.
They were the Hawks. They were a backing band.
Oh, I've heard of them, sure.
A quintessential backing band, and they went on tour with him and kind of went through the States. Levon Helm was the one American U.S. member, I guess. They were on the road together. They started out in 1960 as the Hawks, they weren't officially the band, their own band, until about 68. It was, I think, when they released the first album, or it was shortly after that.
And I watched part of the making of The Last Waltz. So there is another documentary of a documentary about the making of The Last Waltz, the Martin Scorsese stuff. And the guy that was interviewed from the band, he just said, we were just burned out.
Is that Robbie Robertson?
Could have been, yeah.
Okay, he's the guitarist.
That usually doesn't happen. Young people, and they were still young in 1976, relatively.
Right, relatively, absolutely.
They usually don't admit they're burned out and tired of touring.
Well, I think there's multiple factors. If you really get into the roots of the band, I think Robbie Robertson kind of wanted to start going his own separate way and start scoring films. And they
wasn't telling the truth to his buddies.
I don't think so. Well, maybe. There's also all sorts of disputes over rights to songs.
It was also a good excuse to have a last concert.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you can always have another last concert.
And look what happened to it. You know, it became iconic. I've always thought of myself as somewhat rock and roll savvy, and I guess I'm not. Here comes Billy. He's walking in. And I told people that you were going to be walking in, so have a seat over there.
All right.
There he goes. Take your coat off, and I'll turn on that microphone and And we're going to be good. Okay, you're on mic three. Talk to me.
Hey, there we go.
So we were at the point where I was admitting that I didn't know what The Last Waltz was. But I have peach crates full of albums by bands that a lot of people never heard of. King Biscuit Boy. So I was
King
cool.
King Biscuit Boy.
Yeah, check them out. Billy Angel, welcome.
Thank you.
Tell me about the genesis of this whole thing. How did this all start? Because I got Luke's story on how he was introduced to the band and and The Last Waltz. He had it played to him when he was a kid in bed. You look a little older, so what happened to you? If you're not older, I'm sorry.
I just look older. I am. I've always been a fan of the movie, okay. And then I found out about 10 years or so ago that there was a group in Minneapolis called the Big Pink that recreated it every year. And I was always really fascinated with the idea of doing that and wanting to get people to do it. And then about 8 years ago, we were at a going away party with a bunch of musicians, and I brought it up, and there was a lot of interest in doing it. So I got together some friends, and we just decided to go all out and give it a shot. And it was successful, so we keep it going.
How was the first year?
Boy, I guess the best word I can come up with for that would be it was almost magical.
It had to be good for you to keep doing it. How'd you get the word out? Word of mouth spread?
That time
wildfire?
It was just word of mouth, yeah. People came, and then afterwards people were, are you going to do this again? And the response on it was just huge, so
there was kind of a mystique going through the musical community because it was like, oh, these guys are putting on the show, and they're asking so-and-so to play Eric Clapton, and they're asking so-and-so to be Muddy Waters. And it was like, whoa, they're putting together a really killer crew of musicians.
How seriously did they and do these people take their impersonations of these people?
I have a bright red shirt that has been in the show 4 times, and I've never worn it because Neil Diamond in the movie is wearing a blue leisure suit with a red shirt.
Uh-huh.
The Neils have been able to find the suit, but not the shirt. So a lot of them really do take it to heart and dress like the people in the movie. And if they don't, they at least try to dress the era.
Why does Neil Diamond feel like he doesn't fit to me? And if Neil's listening, I'm sorry, Neil, but I don't know. I mean, he
didn't really.
Right.
That was one of those side project things I was mentioning earlier about Robbie Robertson. He happened to be producing Neil Diamond's album. But one neat thing about the song Neil Diamond does play is that Robbie Robertson and Neil wrote it, and it's in honor and memory of Dr. Martin Luther King.
Yes.
We're in the studio with Luke Fisher and Billy Angel. It's the 8th annual tribute to The Last Waltz, and it's coming up Wednesday, November 22nd. 2 shows, dinner show at 5:30. You know what's on the menu?
We had to discuss that. We were talking about it's going to be a buffet.
Okay, good.
We were going to go like with chicken and ham, and then we realized the day after, everybody's going to be eating that stuff. So,
yes.
So what we're going with is a pizza, pasta, salad type.
Why not?
Yeah.
And then there's a late show at 9:30. We have people playing Ronnie Hawkins, Neil Young, Staple Singers, Joni Mitchell, Emmylou Harris, Muddy Waters, Paul Butterfield, Eric Clapton, Van Morrison, Bob Dylan, Dr. John, Neil Diamond, Stephen Stills. And then guys like you guys are playing members of the band. Is that what you've done every year?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Same guy every year?
Yes. Yep.
You've got it down then after 7 years.
We've got a handle on it, yeah.
Okay, good.
For the most part, I was brought in the second year. The first year, the gentleman playing, Rick Danko, the bass player, he was the Robbie Robertson. The second year, I was Robbie Robertson, he became Rick Danko.
Did you read their autobiographies? Do you feel like it's important to know idiosyncrasies about them?
No, I don't think so. When you watch it, you get a sense of the importance of it. I think that's just what we grasp onto. And then all the different styles of music that are presented throughout the whole thing are really what keeps us going, you know, because you've got some real heavy blues and then some New Orleans-style funk and then real pretty ballads in there.
Do you mimic the original concert song for song?
No.
The movie.
We go through the order of the movie.
The documentary. Okay.
Right. Over the past 4 or 5 years, we've slowly been adding in other songs that they played at the concert, but didn't make the movie.
So here's a redundant question. Do you videotape what you do?
Yes.
And make it into your own documentary of a documentary of a documentary? No?
No. Reason being, the licensing stuff. But there are videos out there of the last at least 6 years.
So the stage fright thing, that's what you came up with originally?
Yes. I was looking for something unique to call it, and one of the songs that is featured is called Stage Fright.
Is this concert it for stage fright, or do you do other things?
We do other things, but the core band...
The Rhythm Posse.
The Rhythm Posse. After the second one, we decided we play really well together. So then we just became a band as well. So the rest of the year, we're Rhythm Posse. Night before Thanksgiving, we're the band.
You do it at the same time every year?
Yes.
Yep. It started out, we did it the first 2 years on Thanksgiving. Third year, we switched to the night before.
Because the original concert was Thanksgiving?
On Thanksgiving, yeah. Sorry.
Well, everybody else knows that. I don't know that. Before we part, let's make sure that we let people know about the good cause that fits this very gluttonous time of year, because we do like to imbibe, but not everybody can imbibe. So you guys have done a nice gesture. Tell us about that.
Well, the first few years, all proceeds went to Feed My People.
Yeah.
And then we kind of found that they're okay, and it would be better to donate to Community Table. But we've been donating our proceeds for four years?
I think four. They have more of a need. They feed a lot of people right here in Eau Claire, and every year they fall short on donations. And now they're talking about having to cut down from 7 meals a week down to 4 or 5. So we're hoping more people will be able to come out so we can give them more so more people can eat.
You're doing this at the Metro, exciting new venue in town. I mean, it's at a place that used to be a mecca for live music, which was the Mandarin Club. And lately it's been the Boys and Girls Club. What's the Metro like?
What I've been told is they've kept the original feel of the building, but they've updated it. They still have all the big balconies and stuff, but they tell me they put in some like real nice chandeliers and stuff. Just made it more of a classier place, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Thank you guys for showing up, and have fun on the 22nd. I have to come to this. I feel like I have to cleanse myself for having not known about this. I know you're going to get throngs of people coming to the Metro. Keep in touch with us, please.
Absolutely will do.
Thank you, Al.
A tribute to The Last Waltz, the 8th annual at the Metro, November 22nd. The host band, The Rhythm Posse, has a Facebook page. Next week, we're going to spend some quality time with Judy Collins, who's coming to the Mabel Tainter on the 19th. Lots to talk about. Thanks, BK and D. Thank you guys for listening. See you next week. Well, I sure would like